Hey folks, the mornings are getting colder, holidays are coming up. That's when you need a one-stop shop for stuff that looks sharp, feels good, and that is just as tempting to keep for yourself as it is to gift. That's why I go with Quince. Quince has great options like Mongolian cashmere sweaters, and at Quince you can pick one up for $50 when you'd normally drop $200 or more on the same thing. Plus wool coats that actually hold up to daily wear and still look good. They do it by partnering directly with trusted factories that maintain high standards for craftsmanship and ethical practices, cutting out the middlemen and markups. That means premium quality at half the cost of other high-end brands. The zip-up fleece I just got is perfect for these chillier days. It looks good, keeps me warm, and was totally reasonably priced. Even my wife thinks it looks good on me, and that is saying a lot. And Quince has more than just clothing. Have you picked up anything for home, bath, kitchen, or travel to share or keep this holiday? If not, check out the amazing deals from Quince. Get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/ACRAC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/ACRAC. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ACRAC. Hey, ACRACers, we are thrilled to have as a returning sponsor the one and only TrueLearn Smart Banks. I've used TrueLearn for my residents for years, and it is hands down the best smart bank out there. The questions are excellent, and the answers have clear explanations that break down why each choice is correct or incorrect. I love that it's customizable, so you can target weak areas or take a longer or shorter practice exam anytime. Their metrics are great, and their mobile app lets you study on the go. We use their ITE, basic, and advanced smart banks for our residents, each with 1,000-plus questions, realistic visuals and graphs, and even a calculator that mimics what you have on the exam. Our residents love it and get great results. TrueLearn even has a CME Smart Bank where you can get AMA, PRA, Category 1 credits after you finish training, and an adult cardiac anesthesiology Smart Bank as well. And now they have a fabulous flashcard product, which you can check out, and I highly recommend it. Go to TrueLearn.com and use code ACRAC to get $25 off residency exams, USMLE, and Comlex Smart Bank subscriptions of 90 days or longer, and up to 20% off other healthcare exam subscriptions. We rely on TrueLearn for our test prep, and I recommend you do the same. TrueLearn.com and use code ACCRAC. Hello, and welcome back to ACRAC. I'm Jed Wolpaw, and I am sitting here at the ASA conference in San Francisco, and we have a really neat show that we're doing right here from the conference floor. I have with me James Pruden, who is the editorial director of Anesthesiology News and anesthesiologynews.com. He's also actually very involved with being the editor of a variety of other publications with the McMahon Group. But the one that I've collaborated with him on a little bit is at anesthesiologynews.com. As listeners will know, they've featured some of our episodes, and I've always said it's a great publication and you should go check it out, and I stick by that. So James is with me, and we are going to talk a little bit about what it means to be in the media side of anesthesiology. So James, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So first of all, tell me a little bit about Anesthesiology News. When did it start? What kind of led to somebody saying, well, you know, we've got these journals, right, that publish anesthesiology research, but somebody at some point must have said, you know, it'd be interesting also, instead of just publishing this research, to have something that focuses on actually the media side of it. So give us a little background as to how that came about and what the background of Anesthesiology News is.
So it goes back a fair amount of time. Anesthesiology News has been around for, I believe it's about 40 years. And we have another publication called General Surgery News, which has been around a similarly long period of time. So the idea behind these is to journalistically cover the news out in the specialty. And when it comes to Anesthesiology News, we cover probably over 25 meetings a year in the world of anesthesiology. So either directly or sometimes remotely, we're just out there trying to get the news in the specialty.
That's great. And I would imagine it takes a lot of specialty knowledge in order to be able to cover any medical specialty well. Is there any kind of special training they get? I'd imagine if you took someone who had worked for a regular newspaper and they wanted to come work for you in Anesthesiology News, they would need to somehow get some learning about anesthesia. Do they go through any kind of training, or they kind of learn it on the job? How does that work?
Well, that's a good question. That actually, we have to go back a little bit. So when I was graduated, I went to Columbia, graduated in 1980. wanted to get into journalism. While I was at Columbia, I took some science courses. I have to say I was not the most stellar science student, but I was pretty good in the journalistic side. So after going to, having a couple of bad jobs, I ended up being amounted to an office manager / writer for the FDA submissions for a research company. And it was it required journalistic ability, writing ability. But through that job, I started writing for this company right now that I work for, McMahon Group. That was 34 years ago. So 34 years ago, I actually started working at McMahon Group. So I was not particularly trained in anesthesia topics. I was had come from a medical milieu, so I was working for a bioresearch company. I had some surface knowledge of chemistry and biology. And so, you know, I guess you could say I was grandfathered in that case. Nowadays, you know, I'm in charge of hiring the editors at our company, and all of our editors nowadays have masters in science writing or science journalism, as does Michael, who's our associate editor, who's watching us right now. So they have there's a course. Hopkins actually used to have a program, but I think a couple of years ago they stopped this program for whatever reason. But really only hire people with that degree. And it just is – it puts them ahead of someone who might be a great journalist but just in the medical world would be at a loss. You know, they don't know necessarily statistics. They don't know the differences between physicians. They'd just be starting at ground zero, and we just don't have the time for that at this point nowadays.
All right, very interesting. So, James, tell me what kind of articles are, if someone's out there thinking, you know, I've never looked at Anesthesiology News or anesthesiologynews.com, I wonder if I'd like to. What kind of articles would they find if they look at either the print or the online publication?
Well, what we do, again, I'd say 90% of what we do is cover medical meetings. So, again, we cover 25 or it's probably a little more than 25 anesthesiology meetings a year. The articles that we get from those meetings are based on studies that physicians are presenting at the meeting. And, you know, I have my own bias for certain types of articles. I, in fact, have a little list right here I can talk about. One of the things I really like are stories with big data, you know, large hospital systems or insurance companies. Someone goes in and crunches the numbers, and those are pretty hard to deny. The results from those studies are, I think, very interesting. So any kind of big data, closed claims data, that type of thing, I find very compelling. Nowadays, I'm very interested in the acronym is NORA, non-OR anesthesia, because non-OR anesthesia is now 30% and rising of what all anesthesia is. In that setting, and it's a little different, you know. And it requires a different way of looking at things. It's becoming just a bigger thing in American medicine. And other things I'm interested in is anything on delivering care to morbidly or supermorbidly obese patients. It's something that is just, no pun intended, growing. I guess that pun was intended. But it's we did a story written by a physician, actually, 2 or 3 years ago. The largest patient I think ever operated on was a Saudi Arabian individual who had to be literally brought in by a crane because the king of Saudi Arabia said, you know, you got to get that taken care of. And he had various mental issues as well. But a fascinating article, and it just morbid and super morbid patients, you know, present unusual problems in some ways. We have regular coverage of ped anesthesia, obstetrics anesthesia. Obstetrics anesthesia, you know, maternal morbidity and mortality in the United States is not a good situation. There's parts of Washington, D.C., I read, that are on par with third world countries. You know, there's things that need to be fixed in that world. Cardiovascular anesthesia, we cover the Society of Cardiovascular Anesthesiologists, always cover that extensively. I'm interested in trauma anesthesia, any kind of regional anesthesia, which I think is a growing interest, new blocks, comparisons of blocks. Enhanced recovery pathways is a new topic that we're doing more on. Reduced, you know, perioperative opioid regimens. I was talking to someone who said that there is a new regimen that has no opioids that is for cesarean section patients, which such a major operation without opioids is, on the one hand, I think pretty scary. But if it works, I get, you know, if the patients are okay with it, that's fine. I, a year ago to this month, had my knee replaced. And I can tell you that for the first, you know, 4, 5, 6 days, it was a great thing to have those opioids because it's a painful operation. And so to not have those opioids, I find daunting. I just don't know how that's going to be done, and we'll see. But any regimens that they can produce that can and talk about and can back up with facts, I think, is awfully interesting. And then any kind of never events, wrong site blocks, trying to figure out how those never events happen, which is often very often a mental mistake by usually more than one person. But that sequence of events is just really good to parse through. And I'd say that's it. The other thing is healthcare disparities, I think, is another good topic.
Yeah, I think those are all great topics. What would you want, or what do you want someone to take away from reading your publication? You know, what kind of information, what kind of learning do you hope they'll take away? And how does it differ from what they might take away from reading, for example, Anesthesia and Analgesia or Anesthesiology, the journal?
Well, you know, those journals are the journals of record. So the facts, the details are going to be in those journals. What we try to do is give very often in like 600 to 800 words just the core lesson to be learned from that study. And, you know, oftentimes in medicine there's no definitive answer, but it might point in one direction. We always have in our articles, by the way, a second opinion. So we're not just talking to the person who did the study. We're also talking to someone else who may or may not agree or may say the study was interesting but wildly unrealistic because no one would give that sequence of drugs. In reality, it's too expensive, blah, blah, blah. So there's another way of looking at those studies, and we want to get that information out there too. So we want to have them, the reader, within about 700 or 800 words, get the information from the study that's important and then be able to think about it. And that's probably all we can hope for.
Great. So let's say there's somebody out there, a practitioner of anesthesia, thinking, this sounds really interesting. I would not only like to read it, but I might like to write something for an article for a publication like this. Is that possible? Do you accept articles from practitioners? And if so, how would they go about submitting something?
That's a good question. I'd say about, as I said, 90% of what we do are clinical articles written by our medical reporting staff. But the other thing we do is twice a year we have special editions. In August, we have an airway management special edition, which is composed of all physician-written articles, which are sort of state-of-the-art summaries of whatever topic on airway management. And then in October, we're here at the ASA, so we've just published this, which is another special edition, and that's really everything other than airway topics. And it's a wide, you know, as you know better than I, there's so many things in anesthesia that anesthesiology that you could publish. So we have things on disaster management, we have things on OR planning, we have things on blocks. We, you know, everything is in there. They're all physician written, and tend to be summaries of current clinical thought. And how do you get that published? Well, I love to hear from people who want to suggest clinical reviews. These reviews are about 2,500 words on the low end, and they can run up to 10,000 words. I'm not suggesting you submit a 10,000 word review, but they can go that long. And if you submit to me, to my email, an idea, I would be happy to review it. I'd review it very quickly. And it just has to be, I think the main thing is it interesting enough to a wider group of people? And I say that in general, that that's the case. But we've had a couple of quirky reviews that are clearly not of interest to most anesthesiologists, but they're interesting enough that we've run them anyway. And I'm thinking really of a scheduling review that we just did in the October special edition, where someone really thought through the whole process of how to schedule anesthesiologists for OR duty. And it's you know, it's not going to interest a lot of people, but the people that it interests are going to be very interested in it. So basically, just send me an idea. I'll get back to you. There is an honorarium involved with that, so you're not doing it pro bono, and we can talk about that.
Great. So we can put, if James is willing, we'll put his email or whatever email he'd like people to submit things to on in the show notes. So James, what if somebody's doing something and they think it's pretty interesting? They're not, you know, don't really want to write up an article about it themselves, but they think, gee, I bet Anesthesiology News would be interested in covering what I'm doing. How, if at all, can they get you guys interested to maybe come check it out? Or maybe how would they get you to send one of your reporters to go check out what they're doing?
That's a good question, and it happens from time to time. That would be a question of persuasion, basically, because it has happened, and that requires, you know, someone to go and visit, and very often it might not be possible, or it might be expensive on our end, and so there'd be hesitation, to be honest, to do that, but it's not impossible. It really would have to be something interesting, not just kind of interesting. So, you know, I'm not saying no, but there'd have to be discussion about that.
Sounds good. Sounds like they could at least pitch the idea and see what happens. What would you say, if you think back on the last few years, or even just the last year, what's something that is, you know, you've thought, wow, that was just a fascinating story we covered? Is there something that sticks out, or a couple things that, you know, just really were fantastic or really interesting?
The first thing that comes to my mind is really the drug shortage. And it's interesting in a bad way. I think it's just embarrassing. You know, that should not happen. I think that it brings up all these questions about, you know, if you're a provider of medicine in the United States, do you have an obligation? You have an obligation to your shareholders, but do you have an obligation to provide the thing that you said you were going to provide? And, you know, I think that there's been some real problems with the chain from the manufacturers of these drugs on down through the line to the patient. And I think I noticed that the ASA is making this a big issue, and I think that's absolutely correct. We did a story, cover story, that was probably about 3,000 words talking about this, I'd say maybe May or June, something like that. And that strikes me as, when you ask me an interesting story, that's an interesting thing. It's a failure, and it needs to be corrected. Otherwise, people are going to have to delay surgeries or be in pain, and that's not good. None of those things are good.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about when we think about the trends? You know, you and your reporters have covered interesting things happening in anesthesia, you know, for at least you've I think have been involved in this for at least a few years, specifically in anesthesia. Is there anything you think we should really be looking at in terms of where we're going, or what might be some fascinating stuff that we're on the cusp of seeing down the road?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is really new anesthetics. You know, they don't come around all that often. And I know that people are working on them, and I don't know a whole lot about that, the actual, you know, what's going on right now. One of the questions about anesthetics is actually how do they work? You know, that's very unclear. Various theories about that. So if there's anything, you know, big in anesthesiology, it would be new anesthetics with which to work, and that would be the number one thing I'm thinking of.
Great. Tell me briefly about the kind of, how does Anesthesiology News work? I know that, as far as I know, every anesthesiologist gets sent a copy of the publication. It's not something you have to subscribe to. But how does that work? Does your revenue come from advertising, since people aren't paying for it? How does that work? And is there anything, if people are reading this and enjoying it, you know, is there anything they can do or should do to let that be known?
All U.S. anesthesiologists get it for free. And they get it for free because we have advertising. We are actually very careful about the editorial side and the sales side. Intermixing is not the right word, but, you know, there's a barrier there that is well respected. I always get emails and calls from companies, particularly before an ASA meeting, come meet the chairman of Company X, and let's talk about, you know, their great new product, a great new hemodynamic monitor or whatever. And I always have to decline because that's not what I do. I'm here to look at the clinical studies. I'm not here to talk to the head of the company or the marketing people of the company. Sales guys are here. We have salespeople who are trying to sell ads, and they do that, but there's a no-mixing policy. There's also a no-mixing policy with the ads in the magazine. So if you see an article about, you know, a topic like an airway topic, there's not going to be ads on that page that are airway ads, because that would be, you know, too close. There might be airway ads in the issue. Our policy is a good one. We are good journalists. You know, we're not going to write something in favor of a company unless there's a good clinical study in which there it is, and we'll write the story.
So James, since people don't subscribe, you just send it out to everybody. How do you know? Do you have any way of knowing who's reading it, whether people actually are, you know, enjoying this, or whether they would subscribe if they had to?
Yeah, the readership is actually studied extensively, because, you know, there are, as I said, advertisers in the issue, and the advertisers want to know if their money is well spent. So there is a company called Kantar, which is the company that in the United States does readership surveys for medical news magazines. And twice a year, they will send out surveys to a selected random group of anesthesiologists or whatever the specialty is, to ask them their readership choices. And we've been the best read publication in anesthesia for 20 years. And that's just a matter of record. We can prove that if you like. But Kantar, you know, twice a year we get the scores. It's always a little nerve-wracking when you open the email. But again, so the popularity of the magazine, I think, is significant. You know, people like to read it. It's just an easy read in most cases. The twice a year special editions have longer format, physician written pieces that really get down into the weeds a little bit, heavily referenced. But in general, it's an easy way to keep track of what's going on. Again, we cover 25 meetings a year, and we get the information in there. So sooner or later, you're going to find something that is right, you know, in your wheelhouse, right where you're interested.
That's great. Let me ask you, there's Anesthesiology News, the print publication, and there's anesthesiologynews.com. I believe it's not just the same things published in two different areas, right? So how do you decide what goes on the website and what goes in the print publication?
Well, everything that goes in the print publication will end up on the website. There are, however, additional things on the website. So we have online-only pieces that go on the website, one of which is ACRAC. You know, obviously, we can't put that in the publication. So we're trying to do more multimedia things on the website. Also, articles on sort of late-breaking events. You know, say that there was a new anesthetic approved by the FDA. We want to wait a whole month for you to see that in the publication. So we would, within 24 hours, get an article about that or something that important on the website. Sometimes there are FDA mandated products that are removed, you know, for whatever reason, there are safety issues. We get that on right away. We also tweet information like that right away, so that people know, you know, if there's something harmful out there, we get it out right away. We have a pretty active Twitter account, and also we do Facebook and also LinkedIn.
Great. Well, this has been really interesting, James, and I think a lot of people out there are really going to be interested now to know a little more about Anesthesiology News, and also maybe to contribute either to one of your physician-only publications or to get in touch with you to see if you're interested in hearing more about what they're doing. So thanks for taking the time, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks very much. That was good.
All right. That was great. A lot of fun to be at ASA doing a show. Maybe we'll try to do a little more of that in the future. For those who are interested in following up with James, either because you have something you think he'd be interested in covering for Anesthesiology News, or you just want to learn more, maybe you want to contribute to one of their physician-only publications, you can get in touch with him. I will put his email on the show notes at acrac.com. If you liked this episode or if you have comments to share, go to acrac.com where you can see this and every other episode, and you can leave comments that we can all learn from. Let us know if you've ever written anything for Anesthesiology News or for any other media publication and whether you have any ideas for how they could improve their publication. I'm sure they'd love the feedback. If you are a fan of the show, please consider going to iTunes and leaving a comment and a rating. It really helps others find the show. And if you are interested in supporting the making of the show, please go to patreon.com/acrac. That's patreon.com/accrac, where you can become a patron of the show. Even if it's just a dollar or two that you pledge, it makes a big difference, and we really appreciate it. Big thanks, as always, to all of you who are already patrons, and of course to Brian Park for the excellent job he does making outlines for the shows. You can see them pop up on some of the old episodes. He does one whenever he gets a chance. All right, that is it for today. Thanks for listening. For everyone who was at ASA, I hope you enjoyed it. For the ACRAC podcast and James Pruden, I'm Jed Wolpaw. Remember, what you're doing out there every day is really important and valued.
Hey folks, the holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the United States. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen. I found these foldable cat toys that I got for my kids, and they loved them. They were able to put them together, and they each wanted one in their rooms. And my wife and I loved that we were helping an independently owned small business. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Check it out, and you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/acrac. That's uncommongoods.com/accrac for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.